Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Well, hello there, friends. You found another episode of the Video Nasty Project. Tonight's movie, it comes to us from another alum of the Andy Warhol factory. Tonight's movie was directed by Uli Lamel, a German filmmaker who came over to America to make sleaze and titty movies. Tonight's movie is The Boogeyman. Boogeyman! Check out the trailer.
When you were a child, did they warn you about the boogeyman? The boogeyman. He hurt bad children. And did terrible things to their mommies. But you can't kill the boogeyman. Now, the most terrifying nightmare of childhood returns. The boogeyman. The boogeyman. He's going to get you, and you, and you.
Nothing scared me.
Had its own power.
The boogeyman. You can't hide from him. By the time they believe in him, it'll be too late. The boogeyman, he's going to get you.
And welcome back. We just finished up watching The Boogeyman! Boogeyman! You gotta say it like the kid does.
Boogeyman!
Boogeyman! The movie starts out, well, the movie takes place in the 80s, but the movie starts out in the early, in the 60s somewhere. It's a very urban, very, it's in the suburbs. It opens on this house, it's night, it's panning over this car, stops at the house.
The movie has a very strong Halloween-like vibe to it. The way they do the music, the way they do the credits, the whole opening is very similar.
Yeah, it's very, very evocative. The music, the synth music was just, yeah. It's like, is Carpenter doing this?
I rather liked the opening music. I thought it was well done.
Although, actually, I'm going to contradict you. I didn't think that it was so much Halloween for the opening, at least for the music. I thought it sounded a lot more like The Fog.
Okay, I would agree with you there.
It cuts to the inside of the house, and this alcoholic woman, she's on the couch all being all lovey-dovey with her man. And she takes off the stocking, and it's like, oh, hey, baby, and just whoosh, right over his head. And we see the two kids of the piece, and they're in the front living room window, and they're looking and watching, which is also another very Halloween part of this. Very voyeuristic.
Yep.
So they realize, oh, shit, the kids are watching. What the hell? They're watching us fuck. And so Stockinghead Man, he jumps up and grabs the boy, Billy, and drags him off to his room, ties him to the bed, and says...
And gags him.
And gags him. Pretty much just says, okay, and you're staying there for the rest of the night. Which, weirdly enough, doesn't do anything to his sister, Lacey. She's like three, and it's like, okay, that seems a little extreme for the boy. Why is she getting off light?
He doesn't do anything. He doesn't even chase her.
So they go and have sexy time in their bedroom. And Lacey, she gets a knife from the kitchen and she comes in and cuts him loose. And Billy, apparently this has been going on for a while. That's all Billy can stand. I can't stand no more. And he comes in, grabs the knife and starts doing a walk down the hall, which is another Halloween moment.
Oh, definitely.
And he stabs Stocking Man. Cut to the modern era. And Billy, he's been traumatized by murdering an uncool lover dude. He's mute. He doesn't talk. Lacey, she's also been traumatized, but she doesn't really externalize it. She more internalizes it. And so they're living on the farm with their aunt and uncle, I think it was.
Yeah, she's married and her husband also lives on the farm.
One day, a letter shows up from Mother. Lacey opens it. I haven't seen you in years and years, ever since that event. I'm dying. Please come see me. And Lacey, she freaks the fuck out. It's like, no. I don't want nothing to do with her. Her husband says, hey, man, why don't you go get some counseling, some therapy, some help? Because this is obviously really disturbing you. So they go see Dr. John Carradine.
This actor has been in everything. He was in the Ten Commandments.
He was also in the canon film House of Long Shadows with Vincent Price and... Oh, no, it wasn't Bela Lugosi. It was
Christopher
Karloff.
Lee.
No, it was Christopher Lee, Boris Karloff, and Bela Lugosi. The guy has all sorts of acting cred, so he is totally slumming it by this point.
And I'm watching this film, and I'm like, oh my God, I know this guy. And it was bugging me throughout the entire film until I watched the end credits, and I'm like, oh, it was John Carradine the whole time. Okay. But this guy is like the major piece of talent for this film.
And he's in it for about 45 seconds.
Yeah.
He has like two scenes. So he says, Lacey, you need to go confront your past. So Lacey and her husband, they go to the house where the murder took place. They say, hey, we're looking to buy the house. Maybe, you know, can we come in and look around? The teenage kids, they say, yeah, come on in. They're starting looking around. And Lacey goes into the room where it happened, sees the mirror, and freaks the fuck out because Stocking Head Man is in the mirror.
But he's not on the bed.
He's not on the bed. He's like, oh my God. And so is it her hallucinating? Is it, you know, something more? So she grabs a chair and busts the hell out of it. Husband comes in. Oh, geez, I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry. Here, let me pay for the damage of the mirror. And he collects all the pieces and takes it with him back to the farmhouse. Where, for some reason, he reassembles it into a amazingly intact mirror for having this the fuck smashed out of it. And that's where the fun begins, because the movie has this premise that a mirror sees things and remembers things, and it saw the murder, and so it took the creepy stocking head dude, his soul, into the mirror.
Yep.
Which is a really cool premise.
Oh, I liked that idea. I thought it was great.
Pity it didn't wind up in, well, a better movie. Okay, the movie wasn't bad, but it could have been really betterly executed than this.
Oh, definitely.
And so that's when the fun starts happening. They start having hallucinations. There's incidents of poltergeist activity. There's murders.
The mirror is going on a killing spree, but... it typically will use other implements in the environment as its tools.
And the pitchfork from the barn.
The pitchfork. The window sash that killed the kid.
They left some shards behind in the house that they were looking at. And so they had the really effective, I mean, it was a good special effect of one of the teenagers gets some scissors and she's like possessed by the and she's doing this to her neck with the scissors and it looks really good.
And the other girl, she picks up a shard and it seizes control of her mind or something and drags her into the bathroom where her sister just offed herself with the scissors and her brother got killed by the window. And she's like battling for control over herself and staring into the bathroom mirror, and there's eerie lighting, and flames busting out of the sink drain, and the medicine cabinet mirror smacks her in the head.
And so that's pretty much the rest of the movie, where we get incidents of, like, the teenagers on the beach. The movie takes a Bay of Blood twist, where they introduce some characters for no good reason other to take some characters and kill them.
Couple that's doing the barbecuing, the mirror shard does them by a particularly fiendish way.
That was a really good death. I like that.
Yeah. The shard basically takes the guy over and makes him walk over to the car, and he gets in and he sits down. And it levitates a knife that was in the cooking supplies in the back and basically stabs him through the back of the head so that the knife blade comes out of his mouth, and he's just sitting there in the car. He doesn't fall over or anything. And his girlfriend comes over, she opens the door, sees that he's dead, starts to freak out just a little bit, the door closes, smacks her in the butt. As she's moving towards him, his head has pivoted over towards her, and the knife goes into her mouth, stabs her in the head, and they're stuck together like they're kissing.
And then their friends are like, oh, they're just making out of the car, fuck those two, we're going to get out of here, and they drive off.
Leaving them completely like that. And it's like a kiss of death sort of moment. It was really creepy and very well done, and actually my favorite scene in the whole movie.
And so that's pretty much the movie. Is Poltergeist does random killings throughout the movie.
I should mention the priest. He basically has been brought in by the husband and Lacey to try and figure this problem out, and he touches the mirror, and things go completely weird from there on. A shard goes into Lacey's eye, and then green evil light comes out of the shard and basically barbecues the poor husband. And the priest gets out a crucifix, holds it to her, and while under the influence of the crucifix, removes the shard from her. But in the whole process of doing so, all these knives from the kitchen come in and impale him in the back, and he dies.
If I had one complaint about the movie, actually I've got several smaller ones, but of the biggest complaint I have of the movie is that it kind of sets up to be Billy's story, and then it's Lacey's story for the most part, and Billy gets sidelined, doesn't have a lot to do. Here it is, the very end of the movie, and Lacey's possessed, all this crazy exorcist shit is going on, and the priest is struggling, and all Billy does is sit there, and he finally gains his power of speech again. But that's all he does. He doesn't actually do anything.
There is one thing he does do. He covers up the mirror, which allows it to be grabbed off the wall and thrown into the well.
That's not very heroic.
No, it isn't.
That is your big moment. That is your carpe diem moment, and you fucked it up.
It would have been much more dramatic if he just simply grabbed the mirror physically, and he was the one that hauled it out of the well instead of the poor half-burnt husband.
And he tumbles into the well, dropping it in there, and there's the explosion, and he dies, sacrificing himself for Lacey. That would have been a much stronger ending.
Yeah, especially since he's not in the sequel at all. You know, they have no explanation for him, even though he's a survivor at the end of the movie. The other thing was that they kept cutting back and forth on the lead-up between who was more important in the plot. You know, there's several scenes with Billy early on, like the bit where the girl is coming on to him, and the horse is freaking out, the chickens are freaking out.
The pitchfork flies over their heads.
You know, you get this distinct impression that evil shit is going to happen. And the pitchfork doesn't get involved at all. He strangles her for a bit and then drops her and releases her, and she freaks out and runs away.
Well, they could have built it up where, is Billy really doing this, or is he just, well, he's obviously insane because he's a sociopath because he killed his, you know, stalking man 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But they don't really do anything with it other than he strangles the one girl briefly and then she gets away.
And it was a good scene, too, up to that. But really there wasn't anything else about him that was really all that dramatic. I mean, they did have some build-up. They show him working on the farm. He's in the barn a lot. There's all these farming implements that could be used in horrific manners, like the flying pitchfork. But that's another thing. They never showed the the aunt and uncle getting killed in the barn.
You just see the aftermath. You see them, uncle is pitched for to the ceiling or the wall or way up there. Yeah. And then aunt is strangled with like a garden hose.
Yeah, in the closet. Though they don't actually show their deaths at all. I mean, they could have done it and done it well, but they could have done it horribly. You know, it's like, it would have been a little bit more interesting as a viewer, but they didn't do it.
All right, so since this is more or less a slasher flick, what was your favorite death?
Oh, the knife in the car with the kiss of death.
Damn you, damn you. I like that one, too.
What? I already said it was my favorite. You knew I was going to pick it.
I'm going to have to go with the scissors to the neck, just because it was so well executed.
Executed. Good choice.
Completely unintentional, I assure you. But yeah, no, it was a great look and effect, so I'm going to go with that one.
That is definitely my second favorite. I liked that death, too.
I thought some of the composition shots were really, really well done. Like, so you have Billy is freaking out over the mirrors in his silent way. And so he's going around the house painting over all the mirrors. And so there's this one scene where the aunt comes in to the bathroom as Billy is mid-paint. And she's all like, what happened? You know, why are you doing this? And the mirrors in the background, it's half painted vertically. And so you see Billy, the actual Billy here, and you don't see her, but you see her reflection in the unpainted half of the mirror.
Yeah.
I thought that was really well staged. There was when the girls at the house where the mirror lived for 20 years, there was this one scene where she's in the bathroom and she's got the tap running. And so the mirror is all steamed up and she wipes it just perfectly. Oh, yeah. So you just see her and nothing else. And like, that is such accurate camera placement.
And half of her face was still fogged, but another half was completely clear because that's where her hand had been. I had forgotten about that point. And that kind of played back into the whole Billy painting the mirrors half black.
And by that point, I was thinking, okay, is there some sort of duality theme that's being played here? Some sort of yin-yang? The movie doesn't execute on any of that. It's just a couple of cool instances.
No, but I think in that particular case, it adds to the mystery aspect of it. You know, you think there's something there, and it's just a theme.
And let's face it, Uli Lamell came from Germany. He is an art house director and an art house style, but he's doing sleaze.
So there's some artistry to the film. You know, it's a little cut and paste.
Well, but the whole climax is full of artistry. I mean, he was basically a low-rent Dario Argento with all the weird lights and the Suspiria moment and the it's green here, it's red here. And I thought that was really well done, even if it was, you know, shot with, you know, Buck 98 filter.
I really liked the lighting and the whole feel of the climax sequence because it was just so weird.
So you were talking about how the characters were had your attention the whole movie long and you thought they were well done. I thought it was interesting that to pretty much the last man, all the males in the movie were utter bastards. Obviously, Stalking Man is creepy as fuck and goes on a murderous rampage, so there you go. Billy, sociopathic, tries to strangle the girl, is not very sympathetic at all. You've got the teenagers on the beach. One of them's like,
why don't you get the buns out of the basket? And while you're at it, give me another cold one.
And then you had pretty much all the men were utter bastards. And I thought that was interesting.
Well, the psychologist wasn't.
Oh, yeah. Of all the major.
Yeah.
Okay. The teenagers on the beach aren't some major players. But of anybody of any significance that isn't John Carradine.
Okay.
We're bastards.
Yeah, because the husband is pushing Lacey into doing things she doesn't want to do.
Oh, she's totally under. I mean, he is totally like, no, you need to do this. You need to do this. And controlling and domineering and pretty much a prick.
Now, admittedly, he does redeem himself by his heroic actions at the end. But at the same time, he's kind of not all that sympathetic to her situation.
He's been a prick all along. Yeah. So.
Oh, the priest wasn't a prick.
Yeah, but then
he was a sacrificial pawn.
So, again, an interesting statement, sort of, but then the movie doesn't do anything with it. So it's like, as far as Stocking Man goes, it was poor writing on his part because there's no real motivation other than I'm a prick and I'm running around doing things. Now, to be fair, real life ghosts do real life, I'm just going to be a prick for no good reason. But for a movie, you kind of need a Freddy Krueger, I'm going to go get revenge on all the kids on Elm Street sort of thing.
Yeah.
And they don't really do anything with it other than I'm a prick and murdering people.
Well, we get the impression that he's a prick before he gets killed. But we don't really get a lot of that. His motives for being such is fairly unclear.
You would have thought that since Billy killed him, that Billy would be the focus of attention, but it looks more like Lacey was the one who was, his attentions were focused on.
Yeah, that struck me as rather odd, because, you know, if I'd been the ghost, Billy would have been my very first target. Or, alternatively, I would have tormented the poor guy and had to be my puppet for the entire time.
There you go. That would have been effective. Have him be the embodiment of all the murders and have him do it and have hell. I mean, you could have gotten the actor to do some sort of, you know, voiceover monologue thing of the help me, help me, help me. And it's like, nah, I'm going to use you to murder.
Yeah, that would have been fascinating, but they didn't even go there.
So the movie is really a sum of really good ideas with a middling execution.
Yeah.
The mirror with the soul trapped in it, really good idea. Maybe using Billy as a pawn or as the focus of the ghost's revenge, really good idea. None of it really quite comes together.
Yeah. And it's kind of like a algebra equation where you've got some really powerful numbers, but the stuff connecting it all together doesn't make a lot of sense.
So it's got the Halloween vibe that we picked up strongly from the beginning. It also has a very strong, well, The Exorcist vibe at the very end.
Oh, definitely.
But then you have the shots of the house in darkness, so they've got the iris turned way down, and you've got the little half-moon windows.
Amityville horror movie.
Totally Amityville horror. So this thing is more of a pastiche of much better horror movies left, right, and center.
Yeah. I really liked that with the Amityville horror windows. I mean, that was like, I immediately picked up on that, and they did that repeatedly.
Yeah, they're dragging the mirror out to the well and about to throw it in there, and it's the red light and the windows is pulsing. And
yeah. Also, there was a bit of a poltergeist vibe to it as well. You know, it sort of kind of felt like that in places.
Although, I'm going to be fair to the movie, that Poltergeist didn't come out until 82, 83, yeah. And this what came out in 80. So if it was getting a vibe, it was seeing into the future.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe the makers of Poltergeist watched this and incorporated a little bit of that feel into it. Or maybe it's just me perceiving something that really isn't there.
20 years of horror movies under your belt, and yeah, you're going to see patterns and threads that aren't necessarily there.
Yeah.
So would you have put the Boogeyman on the Video Nasty list, or was it appropriately in the non-prosecuted?
I would not have put this on the Video Nasty list. It had nothing in it that I found objectionable.
Sleazy? Oh, absolutely.
Oh, definitely sleazy. But there's a lot of films out there that are sleazy.
Mm-hmm. Was it creepy? Absolutely.
Yes, definitely creepy.
Was it really ban-worthy? No. I see stuff in Friday the 13th was way worse than this. I didn't even make the Section 2 list.
Yeah. None of the kills were too horribly graphic. Some of them were horrific, but then again, that's part of the genre, as opposed to any other sort of questionable subject matter. There wasn't any of that.
So the reason that the DBP failed to prosecute this movie was because the BBFC, that they were had released it in the theaters uncut, and so they had no ground to stand on because, hey, if they can do it, why is it unsuitable for home viewing? Yeah. And so that's why it escaped the net.
I had kind of wondered about that because after having watched it, I was wondering, why would this be all that questionable?
No, slipped through uncut, so no censoring, no banning, not on the list at all. So did you like The Boogeyman?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a relatively decent flick. I think the movie had some strong points because it had good lead-ups. It had good music, good pacing. It built up suspense before traumatic moments. But, on the other hand, some of those traumatic moments were not as good as they could have been. They did a good job with the pacing. There wasn't any moment at all where I was genuinely bored. For a mediocre movie, that actually says something.
Yeah, I thought it was entertaining all the way through. It held my attention reasonably well.
All of the characters were interesting. All of the acting performances were good enough to be plausible.
I'll give you that the teenagers were just kind of bolted on superfluous, but, you know, they didn't get a lot of development, but they served their purpose. They were pretty decent kills, so.
Yeah, and they did a fine job with that red herring, you know. Oh, we're going to shine the light on this couple and build up and then
nothing.
Go over here and kill the other couple. That was kind of fun, actually. It completely spoiled my expectations. But on the other hand, it had like the best kill in the whole movie.
I wouldn't say that it was a benchmark of horror or anything, but it was certainly entertaining enough for the runtime. The decent kills, the story was reasonably decent, the effects weren't too terrible.
The pacing was all right, the characters were relatively engaging and plausible.
So, yeah, I think a very solid, hey, that wasn't a waste of my time, is what we call this movie.
Could have been better, but then again, it could have been a whole lot worse.
Good Lord, yes. All right, well, I'll catch you next week. Toodles!
This is a dill pickle, a mighty pretty pickle, especially when he joins you at the show. We have lots of pretty pickles waiting for you at the refreshment center. They're plump, tender, mouth-watering. Wouldn't one taste good right now?
And thus endeth our episode of The Boogeyman. Boogeyman! So, join us again here next week when we get another lovely, lovely movie off the shelf. What it is? Oh, I don't have a fucking clue. In the meantime, we want to hear from you. So drop us an email. The address is thevideonastyproject@gmail.com. And we'll catch you next time. Stay evil.